Now, I would like to read with you today in the book of Numbers, please. Numbers, please. And Numbers chapter 14, please. Numbers chapter 14 and verse 36. Numbers chapter 14 and verse number 36. And the man which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land, died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. And Moses told these sayings unto all of the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. Now, let's turn over to chapter 16, please, just for a reference here on the way through. Numbers chapter 16. Numbers chapter 16 and verse number 31. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. Now, let's turn a little further over to chapter 25, please. Chapter 25. And verse number 6, Numbers 25 and verse number 6 says, And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand. And he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And those that died in the plague were 24,000. Now, just while we're real close here to make the connection with where we read in chapter 16, let's just read here in chapter 26 and verse number 11, just over the page, where it says, Notwithstanding, the children of Korah died not. Now, that's some scattered readings that may not have much sense or connection on the face of them, but I just would like to try to draw your attention to what I think are some exceptions here to the rule in the book of Numbers. And I guess what I'm really trying to look at too is some of the tremendous character of people that actually were able to stand up against the flow. Some that were able to resist and to refuse, to reject the pressures that must have been extremely strong and that were pressing in upon them. And so I'm thinking of Joshua and Caleb, and I'm thinking how they stood against a great number of people. A great number of people. And then I'm wanting you to think of how that we also have read in chapter 16 of the family of Korah. And of course, on the face of the account there, we don't learn until chapter 26 and verse number 11 that we read together that there was actually a number of people. We don't really know how many there were. But there was a number of people, and in that particular case, they stood up against the nexus, if you like, with the nature, what is by close to tie of nature, they stood up against their family. And so the children of Korah, they didn't perish. And then I was thinking that in the last case that I want to draw your attention to in chapter 25, is we have the case of one man by the name of Phinehas. And in this particular case, what I want you to notice is, at least to a certain extent, it would seem to me that this man is especially responding in a situation where nothing is happening. where there is something that is scandalous and outrageous that is taking place in front of everybody, and everybody seems to be frozen, and there's nothing happening. And so I just want to try to draw some lessons together for a few minutes here at this particular juncture, and hopefully it will have some relevance to someone here, or maybe to all of us, and that the Lord will give us the help necessary. I'm a little nervous anyway. Just being in a conference like this and having to speak obviously makes you nervous. But I'm a little nervous too because of the topic, because I know that it's so easy, and I think even we heard earlier today, that messages can be construed in a wrong fashion. People can walk out the door with a cockeyed impression in their minds. So I don't want people to go off kilter or off track, off into the sunset with some kind of a crazy notion in their mind. But I'm hoping that you'll be able to catch it and keep it all in perspective and keep it all in balance. There is a measure in which we can have positive group pressure. That's why we're at a conference. That's God even understands our psyche, and that's why you should do everything in your power to miss not one meeting. Why? Because you need that influence. You need the influence of other believers. You need the influence, the pressure. You need the tendency to be brought into conformity to what everybody else is doing in a good situation, in a good context, in a constructive context, in the assembly meetings. You need to be exposed to that. We are exposed to all kinds of influence around us. And if you add up the hours, the mathematics of it mean that the amount of time on that level alone that we are exposed to good influence when it comes to the assembly meetings is greatly outnumbered by the amount of hours and time that we are exposed. And we're very vulnerable and we're very impressionable. And therefore, our lifeline many times to save us and to salvage us from not being steered off track and not being wrongly influenced to be brought into conformity to this world is the influence and impact that can register on our lives by coming simply to the humdrum routine, regular diet of weekly assembly meetings and conferences too. All of these things can have a tremendous... Sometimes, depends on the person, and maybe it depends on their mood, I don't know, but, you know, sometimes there's an anti-social thing. My mind and memory goes back to a particular person, and I remember this person, and he would... maybe you're not supposed to watch people, but anyways. He drew attention because he would never sit with the rest of the people in the meeting. He always pulled the chair away. So, like the body language, you know? And everybody else after the meeting, everybody gets up, you know, and he's just kind of standing around on the outskirts, almost like you'd almost think, whoa, a spy here? What's going on, you know? And it was a difficulty for him to integrate for some reason. I don't know what the whole rationale was. And it was not like hanging around and talking. It was like, boom, out the door, bang, in the car, waiting. Sometimes getting out of the car, coming back in and saying, the wife, hey, let's go. You know? And so you just, that man was losing out on the social, the spiritual, even the spiritual integration into the group. That's what God has in mind with the assembly. That doesn't mean that you now are mindless, you know, and thoughtless, and you just go, you know, like a robot, and you just, you know, follow. Oh, no, I'm not talking like that. But you know what I'm talking about, don't you? I hope you do. So here are some people that I think encourage me, and they also surprise me. Because if you can imagine, here's these two men, and they've gone with their colleagues, and as you already know, and I think I made allusion to this, they're going along with fellow leaders, fellow rulers. And they've gone to scout out and spy out the land, and they're coming back with the report. I don't know. I'm assuming they all got along. They're all sort of in cahoots. They're also in league. They're in the same kind of strata in terms of that nation. And so they go into the country, and they come back with the report. Now, here is 10 against 2. Now, this is an interesting thing. So we've got these two men, Joshua and Caleb. And what they're going to do is they're now going to stand up and they're going to stand against. They're going to stand in contrast to these 10 men. And they're not only going to do that, but they're also going to stand in contrast to the 603,550 soldiers. And I'm repeating myself a little bit, but it's all right. And then they are going to also stand against all the rest of the congregation that was persuaded to go along with this new report that was coming back about the promised land. I somehow suspect that they were not sitting there, Joshua and Caleb, and just, you know, casually thinking, hey, this is good. Well, no, we're all fine. They were, I suspect, if they had any touch of humanity about them, I would imagine that they were trembling and shaking in their boots. And if they weren't, I sure would have been. Would you have? Or would you have been sitting there just stoic, strong, stolid? Hey, no problem. Oh, you guys don't want to do this? Oh, well, that's fine. You know, I'm totally indifferent. Or would you have felt that social, just like a tsunami of pressure, to drop your posture and drop your position and drop your opposition and join into league with what everybody else is doing? So social pressure. I remember this, of course, dates me, of course, but it's still out there, and it's still, I think, on the American Psychology Association site or whatever. I don't know how often you read there, but I don't read there very often. But anyways, you remember that story long ago, but it's about the only one I could think of to come up with that links it to us here, where they did that study of young people. And it was a woman by the name of Ruth Berenda that did this study. And she got groups of children together, and they wanted to check out the influence that the peers, the group, would have upon them. And they mixed it up into different settings and different combinations to see what would happen. And so you remember how that they got them in there, and they had 10 children, and I think the ages were from 7 to 13. And so they had them in there, and they had... They were going to put line A, B, and C in front of them. And you remember how that they were going to ask the question and the instructions were going to be repeated twice, that they were supposed to tell the person in front, the teacher, what is the longest line when they point to line A, B, or C. Now, what there was one poor unsuspecting victim didn't realize is that there was 9 that had been pre-informed, pre-instructed, that instead of following the instructions, they were to do something different. And so they were all to agree to raise their hand when they pointed to the second longest line, not the longest line. And they were going to study what would happen to that one poor kid. Probably would have been subject for a lawsuit nowadays. You know, I don't know. My kid. You know, psychological damage. So here was the situation. You know, and it was interesting. They found out that in more than 75% of the cases, that poor little child at the end of that row the suspension of the logic went out the window, because it's very, very important that you follow the group. It's very, very important that other people think well of you. And unfortunately, Christians are not exempt nor immune. It's in that study, they said that when they changed it, and sometimes they had a teacher in front that was going to do something wrong, and the group was less inclined to follow the teacher. When they had the mix of children that were not as well known, the percentage went down. The more that the children were known, the more that the other children were in the same age, up went the pressure of influence. You know what we need to tell all of us today? Choose your friends well. And I'm going to say something else. And I don't want it, I hope it doesn't sound disparaging or harsh. I think you need to choose your Christian friends well. And nobody said to that. I don't know why. No Christians would ever be guilty of influencing another Christian in a wrong way. No, that doesn't happen. I take back my statement. how could we imagine such terrible things? And so here are two men. And it almost seems to me that they're saying, we don't care whether there are 10 people saying, or we don't care whether there's hundreds of thousands of people saying, we don't care whether it's even in excess of a million people. We don't really care how many people it is. If God has said it, and if God has pledged it, and if God is true, we're going to stake our claim, we're going to raise our flag, we're going to stand our ground, we're going to be true to our convictions. So I don't know how far to take this. Would you have the courage? We were hearing the other night about watching the DVD or watching whatever you're watching. Would you have the courage in the middle of the group to walk over and turn it off? Hey, what are you doing? Sit down. And there's a whole bunch of you together, and well, of course it's time to order the drinks because there's nothing wrong with drinking, right? So, of course, no problem. Are you going to be the oddball that's going to stand out and is going to take a stand? Multiplied opportunities. And I better not belabor the point because, unfortunately, in identifying one or two things, sometimes what gets lost is a whole bunch of other things, other circumstances in which the pressure and power of the group can take over and suffocate and suppress, even if momentarily, otherwise good, godly convictions. And it can drag you down. And it can take you out as a Christian. And it can take you away from God. And here were two men. And you know what? I know that these people were human. They had the whole fear factor the same, because if you were to read in Joshua chapter 1, and that's leapfrogging 40 years or more ahead, and what do we have is a man there, and God is telling him to be strong and to be of courage, be of good courage. And don't remember, don't forget I'm with you. And no man shall be able to stand. It's almost like, wow, here is a man, and if he's needing God, do you know that I was reading in a commentary the other day that there is 365 times in your Bible that it says, don't be afraid. You know why? Or easily intimidated. And so we need courage, and we need fear to be conquered. And Joshua is a man, and Caleb, and you know what they said in that little study? They said that the results were hugely altered if you put just as little as one other person to vote alongside of that one poor little kid that didn't know what was going on. And if one other person concurred dramatically, I don't think it's by coincidence that it's not just one man that stood up, but it's two. It's Caleb and it's Joshua. Choose your friends well. And I think we have the second case, and that is of a tougher one, I think. A tough one. It's definitely a tough one. And that is a family situation. And I can hardly imagine the horror that they must have felt that day. as they stood there and they watched one of the most horrific expressions of God's judgment that ever occurred. I know there was others, so there's, this is maybe, I'm overstating it. But you know something? If I had a hat on, I would take it off to these people. You know why? Because they are children in a family. And they have watched their father and others of their tribe and other family members, and they have watched them take a stand and throw off the authority and challenge the authority, God's rule that God had established. And we've got Moses and Aaron, and we've got the whole thing that went down and the tragedy of what happened and the earthquake that happened in front of everybody. And it swallowed them up alive, and the cry of them goes up to heaven, and people scream and begin to run. And amid that whole chaos, our people, our young people, and it's their own parents, and it's their own kith and kin. Wonder what they must have thought. You know what's nice? Is these people, I don't see them complaining. You know what I see them doing? I see them taking a clear-cut stand in which they then draw back. And along with the others, wisely, they separated themselves. And they overcame the blood test. And they overcame this tremendous hurdle. And you know what they're saying? You know what? If it's even someone as closely connected as my own dad, as my own mom, someone I love with all my heart, I won't take sides with them if they're taking sides against God. And that wise reasoning saved their lives. Saved their lives. And we have the situation in Phinehas. In his particular case, here is this wholesale that Israel is joining themselves to Baal Peor, and they are committing sin, and there is this blatant, this brazen situation where a man is bringing a Midianite woman. And it's as casual as if everything was fine, and everything was not fine. And there's going to be rank, overt, unchecked, unashamed sin committed once more, in addition to everyone that had done it before. Seems to be primarily from one tribe, the tribe of Simeon. And it almost seems like the group mentality has kicked in. I'm not 100% sure how to take where it says that they were to hang up the leaders. And I'm not sure how if that action all happened. The commentators are varied on it. Just what happens. But bottom line is this. A group mentality sometimes means that we all become spectators and we don't do anything. And so, here they are in front of this situation. And there was a man named Phinehas. And in contrast to his otherwise illustrious grandfather, Aaron, who in a similar situation occurred, he actually capitulated and he contributed to the forming of the golden calf and the sin that was rampant, rank evil that broke out and God's judgment that fell. Here is a man by the name of Phinehas. And you know what he does? He steps up to the task and he takes the lance and he goes right in and he deals with the sin. Because the devil must not win. You know something? It was interesting to me that in the previous couple of chapters, there's a satanic effort that is made, and it is to bring about the downfall of the children of Israel, and God intervenes. And what was designed to be a curse is turned into a blessing. But in chapter 25, for a while at least, it seems that God is not doing anything. And I wondered why. You know why? Well, one side of it is this, is I can't stop supernatural activity, unseen, invisible, satanic activity to try to bring about my destruction as a Christian. But I am responsible for my choices. And in this case, people were committing fornication. And they had choice to do it or the choice not to do it. And God didn't physically intervene to stop them doing it, although he imposed the consequences after it. You have liberty to sin, but you don't have license to commit even one sin. And here was a man that he stood up in the face of inaction, and he judged the sin. Now, here's what I want to close on. I want to close on this fact. What about the future of Caleb? What about the future of Joshua? You know where Caleb ends his days? Apart from Mount Hermon, the highest point of land in Israel. On top of Mount Hermon, which, by the way, means fellowship. Conquering giants. Taking possession of property. The inheritance. And at the end of the description, it says, and the land had rest. There was calm. There was peace. What happened to Joshua? Moses is told that you're not going to be able to do it. But Joshua, he's going to take my influence and he's going to bring people in to the land and he's going to cause them to inherit it. You know what I'm learning? The man and the woman that learns the practice of being able to independently stand for God, and please don't take this to wrong extremes, but that person has great potential to be able to influence people down the line and help other Christians enter in and become wealthy believers in Christ. What happens to the sons of Korah? They got a chip on their shoulders? Yeah, you remember what happened to our parents? Remember what happened to our family? Well, that's the last time we're going to do anything for God. You know what happens to them? It talks about them coming into their inheritance on the right side of the River Jordan. It talks about them as warriors fighting alongside of David in a future day to turn the kingdom of Saul to him. It talks about them as worshipers. David set them over the service of the song in the house of the Lord after that the ark had rest. And they ministered before the dwelling place of the tabernacle of the congregation with singing. Singing? It's really easy to get cynical. It's really easy to get sarcastic. It's really easy to get bitter. I'm astonished. After this horrific experience, there's not even a trace of bitterness. They're leading the praise of God's people. 11, perhaps 12 psalms that have their names at the top of it. These people are outstanding in their survival, in their strength, in the stride that they have taken because of a stand that they took one day, even against such odds as their own families that were out of sync with the will of God. Workers, wealthy, warriors, worshipers, watchers at the gate. Oh, I want to tell you, they love God's house. They would rather spend one day in his courts than 1,000 in the tents of wickedness of those rebels that rejected God's
place of gathering and God's rule among his people. Hats off to them. And Phinehas, what happens to him? Right before the chapter even ends, God is coming out with accolades, making a pact of peace. Peace? Why would you make a pact of peace? That he's going to be a priest. Why would you say peace? You know why? Because sin brings violence. It was a Midianite whose word name means conflict. Idolatry and immorality go together. But I can tell you something else. Idolatry and immorality, then immorality and violence. Immorality and chaos. Immorality and conflict. Immorality and division. Immorality is the path in the very opposite direction of peace. God says, there's going to be a covenant of peace that I'm going to make with this man. A priest with the weapon of a soldier. Where are you soldiers? Where are all you soldiers? They're all standing there, frozen, group mentality. They're all watching him. Did he ask? Did he borrow the sword? So I trust that the Lord will bless these considerations to all our hearts, whatever our situations might be, that with wisdom, with care, but with great conviction, that we might not sell out to the pressure of whether it's one or whether it's many, whether it's family or whether it's simply no one doing anything. May God help us to be able to stay true and loyal to the one of whom it is said, they wholly followed me. God help us to do the same.